Elijah's Last Days and His Ascension, Chapter 90. Now that Ahab is dead, a new king must ascend the throne. Therefore Ahaziah, Ahab's son, is anointed king. He was brought up in the ungodly court of his father. Jezebel, his mother, is still living. It is not strange that Ahaziah also serves idols. He has been accustomed to it from his youth. Beside, his wicked heathen mother urges him to continue to worship Baal, her idol. One day the king was walking on the roof of his palace. On his roof there probably was a window or an open panel with lattice work in front of it. Whether he didn't notice it, or whether he thought this lattice work was strong enough to hold him when he leaned against it, we do not know. But whatever it was, he plunged through this opening to the ground. His servants hastily come to him, carefully lift the injured king, and lay him upon his bed. There he lies, helpless, not able to perform his duties. At the present time he is so busy, much is to be done, for he wants to make war. Make war? Against whom? Because the king of Moab was subject to the Israelites, each year he had to give King Ahab 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams with their wool. Thus these animals were not sheared, but their wool was kept on. However, now that Ahab was dead, the king of Moab thought this would be a proper time to rebel against Israel. He refused to give the lambs and rams, because he could use them himself. He no longer had a desire to give them. He feels he has done this long enough. When Ahaziah hears this, he wants to take vengeance upon the Moabites. He is making plans to attack and enter Moab with his army. He will punish the king of Moab for his disobedience. He must and shall have the lambs and rams. He will force the king of Moab to obey him. For this reason, Ahaziah is greatly disappointed when he falls and has these injuries at this time. There he lies. He can do nothing. He is impatient and would like to know how long he will be confined to his bed. He sends a few messengers to ask if he will recover. He commands them, "Go, ask if I shall recover from this injury." To whom must they go with this question? To the prophet Elijah? To the God of Israel? If that were only true. No, he sends them to Ekron, one of the five cities of the Philistines. You still remember that, don't you? There they honor the idol Beelzebub, the lord of the fly. Isn't that terrible, children? Ahaziah knows that the God of Israel will not permit anyone to mock him, and for he had experienced this with his father Ahab. Intentionally he goes to this idol, this fly god. He does this out of enmity and to provoke the God of Israel. Oh, how dare he! The messengers leave, and Ahaziah impatiently awaits their return. Does he really think the stone image can help him? Perhaps he does. In any event, he eagerly awaits the messenger's return. Soon after this, a knock is heard upon the door of Ahaziah's sick room. The door is opened, and in walks the messengers who have just departed for Ekron. Ahaziah the king looks at them in bewilderment. They could not have returned from the Philistine city of Ekron, for they have just left. Why are you here? Why didn't you do as I commanded you? He asks, while he looks at them resentfully. King, they answer, a man met us as we passed through the gate of Samaria on our way to Ekron. He stood before us and said, we must return and tell you that you will not recover, but the fall through the lattice shall be the cause of your death. Besides, this man also told us that this is your punishment because you sent us to Beelzebub with the question of your recovery instead of sending us to the God of Israel. They are silent after delivering their message, and they wait for an answer from the king. Will he again send them to Beelzebub? It is quiet for a moment. Ahaziah then asks, what did this man look like who told you this? Immediately they answer, he was clothed in a mantle of camel's hair and had a girdle of leather about his loins. A mocking grin comes upon the face of Ahaziah, even though he did not think this message very pleasant. I thought so, he said. He is Elijah, the Tishbite. Thus he knows Elijah. Why didn't he go to Elijah for advice? Boys and girls, he did not want to. He does not like Elijah. He hates him. And for what reason? Elijah surely never harmed him in any way. It is because he is secretly afraid of this faithful messenger of God. Ahaziah immediately sends a captain with 50 soldiers to capture the courageous prophet. Elijah is sitting outside Samaria on the top of a hill. This captain with his soldiers soon stands at the foot of the hill. He has no desire to climb the hill to get Elijah. Therefore, he calls jeeringly, thou man of God, come down. The king commands you to come down. Do you hear that? He says, thou man of God. But he doesn't believe it. He doesn't believe that Elijah is a true servant of the Lord. Oh no, he is mocking with it. He defies Elijah. The Lord will not permit himself to be mocked by anyone. Neither will God suffer his servants to be mocked. They who dare do this shall be punished. Listen and see what happens. Elijah the prophet answers seriously, if I be a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume thee and thy 50. Suddenly, flashes of fire shoot downward, and presently all these mockers lie dead upon the ground. The heavenly fire kills them. Ahaziah waits, but the captain does not return. No, he cannot return, for he is lying dead upon the ground. He and his soldiers were burned to death. Ahaziah sends another captain with 50 soldiers to capture Elijah. This captain also mocks with Elijah. Again, fire descends from heaven, and they also die. Still, Ahaziah will not give up. He casts these warnings to the wind. A third time, he sends a captain with his 50 soldiers to this dreadful hill. Trembling, and with a throbbing heart, this captain approaches the hill upon which Elijah is resting peacefully. with horror, he sees the cold, stiff bodies of those who have gone before him. He falls upon his knees tremblingly before Elijah. "Thou man of God," he says, "will you spare me and my soldiers? Behold, fire consumed the first two captains with their soldiers. But let us live. Do not kill us. The king has sent me to get you, and I must be obedient." Do you hear that? This captain does not mock. Elijah gets up and without fear goes with him to the royal palace. The angel of the Lord had told him to go with this third captain. Soon Elijah stands at the bedside upon which the injured king is resting. "Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel," Elijah says boldly, "you will die, because you didn't ask the Lord. Instead, you sent to ask of Beelzebub whether or not you would be cured of your sickness." After Elijah had delivered this dreadful message, he turns about and calmly goes away. Ahaziah permits him to go. He dare not lock Elijah in prison. A few days later, the dead body of Ahaziah is carried from the palace and taken to the grave. The word of the Lord spoken by the prophet Elijah has been fulfilled. Ahaziah did not recover, but died. Ahaziah did not reign as king very long, not even 2 full years. In this way, the Lord punished this ungodly king of Israel. His brother Joram became king in his place, because Ahaziah had no children. Thus, Joram was another son of Ahab and Jezebel. We see 2 men walking on the road from Gilgal to Bethel. Gilgal is the place where the Israelites encamped after they had passed through the River Jordan under the leadership of Joshua. Bethel is the place where one of the golden calves stands, isn't that right? These 2 men are Elijah and his successor, Elisha. Do you still remember that Elijah put his mantle on the shoulders of Elisha when Elijah came from Mount Horeb? Since that time, Elisha was with Elijah continually. But now Elijah tells Elisha that he should not go with him to Bethel. However, Elisha does not want to leave his beloved master. He answers, "I am going with you. I will not leave you." A school for prophets is in Bethel. Elijah is going to visit this school. He is going to say goodbye to the sons of the prophets. The young prophets say to Elisha, "Do you know that Elijah shall be taken away from you?" Elijah answers, "Yes, I know it." Children, most likely the Lord had made this known to him. After Elijah had talked for the last time with these prophets, he bids them farewell. He leaves Bethel and goes over toward Jericho, where there is another school for prophets. "You stay here at Bethel," he says to Elisha. Again, Elisha refuses and goes with him. He will not leave his master. The prophets of the school at Jericho also tell Elisha that Elijah shall be taken away. Leaving Jericho, Elijah proceeds toward the River Jordan. Again, he tells Elisha to stay there, but once more Elisha refuses to be left behind in Jericho. He will not leave Elijah go alone, but insists on accompanying him. These two men soon stand by the waters of Jordan, and they want to go over. But how? Suddenly, Elijah rolls up his mantle and strikes the water with it. And then, a pathway opens straight through Jordan. Elijah and Elisha walk to the other side in this path on the bed of the river. This is again a wonder of God's omnipotence. Omnipotence means unlimited power. Both men climb the bank on the other side of the river, and at the same instant, the water flows in the river as usual. They talk together as they walk along. Their faces are serious. They both know that something is going to happen, but exactly what, they do not know. Certainly, Elijah shall be taken away. But how? Suddenly, Elijah says to Elisha, "Ask what I shall do for thee before I am taken away from thee." Thus, Elisha may ask for whatever he desires. It was as though Elijah had said, "What do you want from me? What can I do for you?" Upon this, Elisha answers, "The Lord has helped you wonderfully in your work. However, now you will be taken away from me. Oh, that the Lord also would help me in my difficult labors. Oh, that the Lord would give me strength and wisdom." "I cannot give that to you," Elijah says. "Only God can give that. But if you shall see me when I am taken away from you, the Lord will grant your request. The Lord will give you your petition." Elijah cannot say more than this. They walk forward, still talking together. In the meantime, a thunderstorm comes. The lightning shoots down, and the thunder rolls. Suddenly, Elisha sees a chariot of fire, drawn by horses of fire and driven by angels. Elijah is taken into the sky with this chariot. Elisha is left behind, but he sees his beloved master rising higher and higher. Holy reverence fills his heart. He cries out, "My father, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof." What does that mean? Boys and girls, Elijah was worth more to the Israelites than an enormous army with many chariots and thousands of horsemen, because Elijah prayed for the people. Elijah loved his nation. And from now on, the Israelites must be without their best friend and protector. For that reason, Elisha said this. Something fell upon the ground close to Elisha. It is the mantle of Elijah. Elisha sees the mantle, but he doesn't pick it up immediately. No, he looks up at Elijah as long as he can see him. He watches Elijah until he disappears in the dark clouds of the thunderstorm. Death has come into the world because of sin. Every person must die. Some die very young. Others become old. But die we must, everyone. Everyone? No, Elijah did not die. Elijah was taken into heaven with body and soul. You also know someone else who had been taken into heaven, don't you? Do you still know who he was? He was Enoch, isn't that right? He lived in the time before the flood. This only happened to two people in all the Old Testament. They were Enoch and Elijah. Oh, boys and girls, what a great event this must have been for Elijah. At once he was taken from this world, which is full of trouble and sorrow, and translated into eternal glory, where there never will be any trouble or sorrow. The Lord took his faithful servant into heaven in a chariot of fire.